You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
That's going on in the Carolinas, and keep your eye on that because those people are going to need help. And federal government's not going to be able to provide it all, so you're going to get an opportunity. Just be careful where you give your money. Yeah, so you don't give it to some homeless former Marine via a GoFundMe page that a couple sets up, and then they take all the money. But much to GoFundMe's credit, good morning, by the way, much to GoFundMe's credit, they're making a ton of money, right? Yeah, GoFundMe is a platform, and they take a slice of it. So, it's like, what is GoFundMe, like three people? Yeah, leverage now, I think it's called scale. Leverage is, you can do that now. To the tune of making the richest people the planet has ever known. I think. You know, that would be an interesting. Are they the richest in relative terms? Oh, my God. I'm watching a video of Dianne Feinstein. You know, Dianne Feinstein's 84 years old. You know, when you're 84 and things start moving fast, oh my God. So richest in relative terms. How about South Korea and the fantasy they are living? Would you like to live that one with them?
We can do it! He's not a bad guy! I know he wears the same suit every day, and he's got a shitty haircut, kind of like Hitler had, but he doesn't have that stupid mustache. Yeah, he doesn't, in spite of his shitty haircut. He's a nice little guy, he's jovial, and for God's sakes, he hung out with Dennis Rodman. Of course he wants to give up his nukes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what he wants to do. God bless. You know what? And we like the president of South Korea because he likes the Marine Corps, right? First place he went when he came to the United States, National Museum of the Marine Corps to pay tribute. Pretty cool little story. His family was evacuated from around the Chosin Reservoir. And when First Marine Division and the units that now comprise 1MEF withdrew from that area, finding the whole way surrounded, most of it, they took a lot of civilians with them and took them off via boats in on the coast. So he was one of them. So we liked the guy. But dial down the hummingbird with that jackass, okay? Good God. So yeah, that's going on. We'll talk about that a little bit. I should probably get Grant Newsham on to talk about that, see what's going on. Is South Korea just playing the part? Because they look like Charlie Brown getting ready to, you know, try to kick the football and Lucy pull it out again. So, but maybe that's their role. Maybe that's their role. Their role is to continue to foster hope and go down this road and to cajole the North Koreans. And then the United States plays the bad cop. Japan plays kind of the bad cop. And that's how we beat it up. I'm not sure. We'll see. We'll talk about it, though. The other thing is the Supreme Court. Let me ask you a question. So you're this woman who has shown up at the 11th hour. Okay. Would you testify in front of the Senate? Would you be the cannon fodder for that? My own opinion, this is just me, but were that my sister, I would say not only no, but hell no. Why would you want to be drugged through the streets by them? Okay? When I say them, I mean the crew in Washington, D.C. that crews our Congress and that crews... yeah, why? Why would you want to do that? They're not interested in the truth. So if you are telling the truth... And there's no supporting documentation. Okay, this is me playing devil's advocate with my sister. Okay, and she tells me, no, it was him. He did this. Okay, is there any supporting documentation that you have? Well, no. Okay, so you're going to go to Capitol Hill and allege something, and then he's going to stand up with his entire career behind him. All these other women who went to his high school have signed letters saying that he was nothing but a gentleman. And so how does this play out for you? And she looks at you with kind of like big eyes. And then you say, it doesn't play out well for you. You become a pawn in a game of national power. And the national power game that's being played is the Democrats are trying to stall this till after the November election. The Republicans are trying to certainly push this through before the November election. That's the game that you are going to get in the middle of. You're going to be a pawn in. And if you think that they're interested in the truth, then you don't follow American national politics very closely. They're my sweet sister. So, is that what you want? Do you want your personal life to be cannon fodder for that? And so, I mean, if you cared about your sister, would you have your sister, you know, go through that? I don't think I would. In fact, I'm sure I wouldn't. Because there's nobody there, right? And that's before the crazies get a hold of it, right? The people that inhabit our media, right? And who knows, what are people going to say about you then? They're going to dredge up people from your past? What do you think they're going to say? Do you think they're all going to be kind? So is that what you want to do? Is that what you want? Do you want to put yourself through that? Is the juice going to be worth the squeeze? So, again, I mean, the only people that know the truth are she and he. But you watch this game that gets played, this theatrical contest that gets played during the hearings, blah, 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 and it's all about one thing. It's all about the fact that it got said during the election, but now it comes to fruition, right? The person who gets elected, right, in this term is probably going to appoint two justices, which will tilt the Supreme Court. That's what this is about. And the struggle to keep that. You have people like Cory Booker, you know, running for president already, and this is his national forum to do so. And so you watch it, and so it goes. All right, you have the conservatives who see this as their opportunity to put an imprint on the court, and then you have the whole Roe v. Wade thing going up behind it. So anyway, how would you advise your sister? What would you say to her? And if she looked at you and said, "I can't stand the thought of him being on the Supreme Court and me having to look at that." Well, he's been in public life. He's on the news all the time now. So are you willing to irrevocably change your life by exposing yourself to the abuse of the nation? And you understand, and I think probably only beginning to understand now, the fury with which that'll happen. The people that will troll you electronically, right? We had Alex Hollings on, and he was talking about somebody who got a hold of his cell phone number and the constant calls and the voicemails and blah, 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 blah. Imagine, you know, if you're in some kind of national controversy, you know, and the poster child for it, it's sad to say, is Monica Lewinsky, right? She was drugged through the street. She was preyed upon by the President of the United States, who then stood in front of the nation and said, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Ms. Lewinsky." And her life's been annihilated. And every time she attempts to say something of substance about what happened to her, she's ridiculed. Monica Lewinsky, back in the news. Where's the blue dress? Oh, stand-up comedy. So let me tell you what we're going to do on the program today. I've been intrigued. Things that, you know, you learn. I've been intrigued by Admiral Stockdale. This whole and if you haven't read the book or listened to the audio version of it, of the book Struggle Well, I would tell you to do that. So in that book, this idea of not only struggling but thriving, and in after I read Viktor Frankl, I listened to Viktor Frankl's book. I have to listen to it again because it's relatively deep. Probably don't pick it up the first time. So I'll probably wind up listening to it 3 or 4 times. Anywho, this concept of thriving in an environment that is not the best is interesting, and these works are pregnant with that idea. So Sir Admiral Stockdale, you're going to hear him today. And the interview, it's kind of done in reverse. Okay? The interview is kind of done in reverse, but it's the best interview I've seen with him yet. So you'll hear from Admiral Stockdale. And specifically what you'll hear is him address, starting at the Hanoi Hilton, and kind of works back. And he has really interesting things to say about the Gulf of Tonkin. Okay, because he led the attack on the patrol boats that got after, quote unquote, they got after the USS Maddox. Okay, and so it's pretty interesting to hear what he has to say about the Gulf of Tonkin and what happens there. But he talks about his existence in the Hanoi Hilton, their code of conduct, and the impact of the code of conduct period since we had adopted one in the 50s on them as and their conduct. Then it and he talks about his own behavior, what he did, and how he would not cooperate them, and how he would not allow himself to be used, and the things that sustained him. Very interesting. He explains their code. Their code. Their code's interesting, right? So, their code goes like this, right? It's 5 by 5. They take one letter out of the alphabet, which is K. So C doubles as K. Alright? Got that? That's important. Okay, because now you only have 25 letters. So now you understand 5 by 5, right? So when they do this, tap, tap. Alright? That's the second row. Right? So, and then if they do one tap, that's F. Okay? And so he explains it. And then he explains their code for even doing it. The first, the transmission that says, hey, I'm going to send you something, or I want to talk, okay, would be something like, something American, right? Dun, 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 dun. Or something that they, you know, some little sound that they could make on a pipe or something that conveyed, you know, America. Okay, and there was he said there was a series of them, but it was something unique that you would know if you were an American, you would recognize it, and you had to get a response before you transmitted. Okay, 2 taps was it's clear. 1 tap. Was no. Somebody's around, somebody's near, I'm unsure if I'm in the clear. I made that rhyme, did not mean to. Okay, so, and he goes through that. It's riveting stuff. Riveting stuff. And so, yeah, Admiral James Stockdale. And then, if I can, I'm gonna dig out the interview I played with John McCain. I want to say it's about 13 minutes because McCain talks about there's one interview I did when he passed away that I thought was pretty interesting, and he talks about, you know, their time in solitary confinement and when they were beaten and tortured, and then the last couple years of their confinement when they were together. So I want to, that's in my opinion, that's worthy of listening to again. So on this Wednesday, we're going to we're going to study a little bit of Admiral James Stockdale. And he's an interesting guy. His career through the Naval Academy, into the Black Shoe Navy, right, the Surface Navy, into the Brown Shoe Navy, aviation, and then his role flying off the coast of Vietnam, I believe in 1965. And ultimately, yeah, he leads the attacks on the patrol boats. And so what he says is pretty fun. So anyway, good morning to you. Hope you're having a good day. A bunch of stuff in the news to include North Korea, South Korea. So it's, wow. And so we continue to play charades on the Korean coast, which is always interesting. And the question is, does it lead anywhere? Does it lead anywhere? And so, again, get your measuring stick out. How do we measure if he's serious? So we'll talk about that a little bit. Good morning to you. United States Marine Corps band makes it official on a Wednesday. Is dedicated to the people of South Carolina, of North Carolina, and the region. Some of it swings down into South Carolina. Hang in there. Your fight is going to be a long one. Your lives are probably going to be changed forever by this kind of event. I think everybody down there knows. The rest of the nation is rooting for you, and hopefully there'll be something else that we can do to ease your pain. But God bless you and good luck to you. And remember, life's not for sissies. You got to be tough. So tighten your belt. It's not going to be a short recovery. It's going to be a long recovery. And good luck to you. You're in our thoughts.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech.
Live historian, wake up calls for high stakes. Jaw-dropping moments during 90-minute lunch break back. Hole-in-the-wall bars.
But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore. So, young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose. So you want to keep them in the cage.
Can you imagine, were you a Vietnam veteran and you came home and they told you to take your uniform off and don't talk about it and just forget about it?
I can't even imagine. I have so much respect for those guys.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Neller, I read your book. Patton says that about Rommel in the movie Patton. Yeah, at least they say he did. And I'm not sure anybody knows if Patton said that. But it made for good TV. Or it made for a great movie. Yeah. The book, I think it's Attacks. It shows Patton falling asleep reading it. And then when, I think they're blasting them, I don't know where, the Kasserine Pass or something like that. And I think we got blasted there. But the next time, Patton's got his binoculars on watching it. I read your... Rommel, you glorious bastard, I read your book, I think is a quote. So that's where that comes from. Yeah, Neller, I read your book. All right, we'll check the weather right now. On this Wednesday morning, the 19th day of September. Waiting for the current temperatures to load. Sorry about that. Normally, I hit them before. Currently sunny and 79 degrees in Quantico. It is sunny and 83 at Camp Lejeune with 3 weather alerts. One is a flood warning. 2 is a beach hazard statement. And 3 is a river flood warning. So, down to 3, but they're pretty substantial. 2 of the 3 involve flooding, and that's never a good thing. 80 degrees and sunny in Granbury, Texas. It is cloudy and 49 degrees up in Montana. So, Montana's been cool for this time of year. Sunny in 68 and 29 Palms, that's cool. Clouds in 62 at Pendleton, that's cool. As a matter of fact, watershed event last night, grabbed a blanket to put to augment the quilt last night. Sleeping with the windows open out here. That's a first. Haven't done that in a while. Dark, cloudy, and 83 in Okinawa, so that's pretty normal. And in the Helmand province of Afghanistan, in the area of Marja, Lashkar Gah, a little bit south of Sangin district, it is 87 degrees under clear skies. So it's markedly cooler. In the Helmand province of Afghanistan, and in the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California. It is 63 degrees under cloudy skies, and so we like that because that normally means we're going to be in the 70s. High for today with clouds, 79 degrees, 79 tomorrow, and 78 on Friday. Yes! All right. We will take a break. We'll come back. We'll check news headlines, and there's a few stories you need to listen to. So more of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Winning.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and hope in me. Of this heartbreak. I wanna drive fast till I break down in nowhere, so I can finally cry these tears when I reach.
I got a cool email to read. Peyton Davis winning. I know when people say winning, Mac winning. Yeah, I know it doesn't feel like winning, okay? But it is. Trust me, it's winning. Yeah, let me share an email that I got with you all. Hold on. Where is it? Fishing. Is this it? No, that's not it. That's not it. Hold on. That's not it. Where the hell did I get it? It's an email about doing good. Pissed, it would only come to one or two mailboxes. And it's a story, it's an email about somebody who, you know, is helping out at a veteran event and normally kind of stays in the background. And, decided that they would do something more after listening to the program, and they did. So give me a second. It's worth the wait, I promise you. Because I read it on my phone. See, my phone has a consolidated inbox. Yeah, that's the way that works. Is it? No, that's from Ben. Shit! Alright. It was over the weekend. Shit. Got people watching Elizabeth Smart. Yeah. Anyway, so the gist was, I normally volunteer, I normally cook, blah, 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 blah. But because of listening to you and the different people you've had on, and your discussion about post-traumatic winning, and listening to the Gunner, and I decided that I would get out there, and I would talk to people, and so our conversations turned to living with it, and we started talking, and I got a little bit of that, and I can't get over it, how great it made me feel. Just wanted to share this with you and let you know that your program motivated me to get out there, to stick my hand out, to help other people, to spread the gospel, and it felt incredible. I'm a believer. It is a tsunami. Keep preaching it. Don't stop, because I would have never done this were it not for listening to you. And I touched other people's lives, maybe in only a small way, but it felt incredible. So I can't find the God. I can't find the email. Yeah, awesome. Absolutely, positively awesome. Okay, we need to check the news. Marine Corps Times. Let me tell you what a cool guy I am, right? I do the news, right? And most of a couple of the writers that write for Marine Corps Times are former Marines. And I judge them on a daily basis. Now, you hear Alex Hollings comes on and talks about what he does for a living. Let me tell you what these people do. They sit down and they write on a daily basis. And there's not too many of them in writing news. If you go look at a website, if you go look at Marine Corps Times, go look at the bylines, who's writing. So, and if you listen to Alex Hollings, man, he sits down and he cranks out content, right? He's got to read, he got to study, got to put out the content. All right, so that's what they do. So I've come to have, as Sean Snow has been on the program, so, like, I have access to people that a lot of people don't have access to, and Major General Furness is one of them. So, I'm laying in bed yesterday morning, and my phone rings. Hello? No, actually, I roll over, I see who it is, and I said, hey, what's up? He goes, buddy, what's up? What are you doing? I said, you know what? I'm just hauling my dead ass out of bed. What are you doing? And he laughs. He goes, oh, I've been up. We don't sleep a lot here these days, and we're trying to get out from underneath this thing. So we're talking. I said, hey, do you have time to come on? He says, sure. So he comes on. Now, I'm listening to it, the interview, and I'm thinking, you know what? The meth's, I haven't seen, you know, an interview put up of one meth doing a press conference or anything like this, you know. So let me tip off Sean Snow and be a team player. See, that's how I see the world. I see the world as a team event, okay? I see life as a team event. So headline. Top of the fold headline. Norway deployments frozen at camp, as Camp Lejeune cleans up from Hurricane Florence. So he goes through and he documents all the things, right? Blah, 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 blah. 3-8 slated to replace 1-6 in the next rotation to Europe and Norway as of right now. You know, 1-6 advanced party is at Camp Lejeune. Da 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 da. Furness, commander of 2nd Marine Division, told All Marine Radio on Tuesday. So there you have it. See, doing good things, helping people out. Helping people out. So there you have it. One team, one fight, man. That's how I do it. But, yeah. All Marine Radio, ripping up the news. Poland wants a permanent United States base. Yeah, Vlad, how's that thing working for you? And the president of Poland said this in his press conference yesterday. How about Fort Trump? Well, why is that? Why would we call it Fort Trump? Because the Obama administration was trying to get along with Vladimir Putin. Like, exactly. Like, where's the rim shot for that? Ka-ching. How stupid is that? Speaking with the reporters at the White House after he met with Polish President, essentially Andrzej Duda, Trump said Poland is willing to make a very major contribution to the United States to come in and have a presence in Poland. If they are willing to do that, it's something we will certainly talk about. Right? Poland's been clamoring for this, right? Clamoring, they are our most enthusiastic ally in Europe right now, Poland. So, anyway, quote, this is from the president of Poland. President Duda. Quote, I'm smiling when talking to Mr. President. I said that I would very much like to ask to set up a permanent American base in Poland, which we would call Fort Trump. How about that? You want to know why? Because they're so frustrated with the United States. We want you here. Okay? Other nations don't. We do. You get closer to where you need to be, which is Russia. The fight is no longer on the German border. Okay? That went away years ago. The president is in North Carolina now. You know, one of the things about visiting as a president is you don't want to stop and impact things. So you have to go and you have to kind of land on the periphery. It is going to be a media event, right? You got to meet with the governors and people like that. But you're trying not to detract from the emergency response, which is a bit of an art itself. The got a Marine in the picture. I'm not sure who that is. He's a 3-star. I probably should know him by name. There's Marines in the background. So maybe he landed at New River. I think that's the MEF commander. See if my guy Furness is around. That is. VMA 542. Anyway, the stories, again, you haven't read, and this goes much credit to the DOD for the way they postured assets around the storm. Ships following the storm in case they were needed. Helicopters and trucks at the ready in case they were needed. All mobilized, ready to go on the periphery of the storm. So, kudos to the DOD and the Department of Homeland Security for the stories that aren't getting written now. And so glad to see people pay attention. The all right, so yeah, Fort Trump. Yeah, the president's speaking right now, so
we've gone through very dangerous work and still dangerous, but some of the hard work is taking place right now. Even though it's nice and beautiful.
He's in Cherry Point.
I was talking to the governor, and Governor, I want to thank you. Really fantastic, fantastic job. But in speaking to the governor, some of the flooding is actually epic, hard to believe. And we've seen all the pictures where houses are literally covered beyond the roof. You don't even know there's a house there, and, you know, one of those things. Well, the water's starting to go down now, finally. But, again, I want to thank Governor Cooper. I want to express my gratitude to your Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, very importantly, and to all of the state and local leaders who have been really incredible partners throughout this response and recovery. There's been a lot of talent, a lot of work, and a lot of talent. Without the talent, it doesn't work either. You had a combination of hard work and that great ability. We're joined also by Secretary Nielsen, Administrator McMahon, Director Mulvaney, and FEMA Administrator Long. I want to thank you all. Administrator, great job. Incredible job. The planning that went into this is beyond belief. So I just want to thank Secretary and Administrator.
You know, and again, I can't emphasize that enough.
Great friends of mine and some very talented people that love this state. They love all our states, I think we can say. And that's Senator Richard Burr. Where's Richard? Richard, thank you very much. We have great representatives. Senator Tom Tillis. Thank you. Thank you. Where's Tom? Thank you, Tom. Lindsey Graham. Lindsey? What else? Lindsey, oh, look at Lindsey. Lindsey, do you want to pull up a chair? What happened to you? You know, we could have Richard, would you let him sit at our table? I don't know. Come on, pull up a chair, Lindsey. But Lindsey's been great. And Tim Scott, where's Tim? Good. I don't know, I feel pretty guilty. Come on, man. They have been fantastic, all four. And we've had a lot of help from Congress, in all fairness.
There are the senators, two senators sitting in the back row.
To make this perfect. And that means, unfortunately, the money will be a lot, but it's going to come as fast as you need it. We're going to take care of everybody. Hurricane Florence was one of the most powerful storms ever to hit the Carolinas, one of the most powerful and devastating storms ever to hit our country. To the families who have lost loved ones, America grieves with you, and our hearts break for you. God bless you. We will never forget your loss. We will never leave your side. We're with you all the way. And to all those impacted by this terrible storm, our entire American family is with you and ready to help, and you will recover. Most importantly, we give thanks to the incredible first responders, including sheriffs, police officers, firefighters, our great Cajun Navy. They're all over the place. I put them up online, and everybody loved them. Everybody loved them. But they put themselves, all of them, in harm's way, and what they've done to save precious lives of our citizens has been nothing short of incredible. Nearly 20,000 federal and military personnel are supporting the response efforts along with Southeast Coast, including brave men and women of North Carolina and the National Guard. Now, of course, we're going to South Carolina right after this, and they have been incredible, and I know you've worked and coordinated very well also, Governor, with South Carolina. That's been a really great partnership. Together with state and local first responders, they've assisted and rescued more than 3,000 people. So we want to thank you. And I will say I've been watching the Coast Guard with all of the helicopters lifting people off rooftops, and it's been an incredible job you've done again. We appreciate it. Thank you very much. More than 1.6 million meals have been delivered to North Carolina, and more than 400,000 are ready in South Carolina as soon as they're requested. So we're standing by with 400,000 meals in South Carolina. Crews have restored power to over 1.2 million customers already in North and South Carolina, and the power is starting to go on as soon as the water goes down. They're meeting the demand incredibly well. So I want to thank the power companies and all of the federal workers, but we have to also thank...
I'm curious to what he'll say, if he'll say anything about to all the people that don't have flood insurance.
In moments of despair, we witness the true character of the American people. So true. Citizens all across our country rally together to rescue the stranded, to protect the innocent, and to restore hope to families who have experienced tremendous and unbearable loss. I want to thank all of the people here today, a very special group of people, very talented group of people, and we love working with you. It's an honor to work with you. We've done a real job, and we've got to continue to do that real job, because another phase is coming in right now, and we're going to meet that phase just like we've met phase one. So, Governor, again, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And to everybody, thank you very much.
There is the President of the United States in North Carolina at Marine Corps Air Station in Cherry Point with a Harrier parked, the press conference in the hangar, and a Marine Harrier sitting right behind the President. So well done, boys and girls. All right. Let me go back to the news. No, again, the money comes for infrastructure and all of that. And so the gap in all of it is people that did not buy flood insurance. And what do you do for them? Do you do anything for them? You know, that was their choice, right? And if you do something for them, you know, then what? What about everybody else in the next disaster that doesn't have it as well? So what do you do for them? So it's not an easy problem. And so, as I said before, if you've ever been a part of one of these, the economic ripple that goes through the region as people simply look at their homes and they say, I can't do it. Can't do it. I've got to, here's your keys, mortgage company, you can have it. And I'm going home. I'm going to live with my kids. And so, that's awful. And again, they can't take additional loans out. And what are you going to do? Give them grants? Nobody's going to do that. So that's why I say, to me, the risk that is assumed by homeowners and the way they're affected in these catastrophic events, to me, calls for a different national program. And it ought to be on everybody's mortgage, and anybody who has one, businesses and homeowners. There ought to be, however we spread load this across the nation, $2, $5, whatever a month in your mortgage goes to some kind of national fund that, you know, that rescues regions of the nation during periods like this, because the numbers are huge, the people affected, so everybody ought to be indemnified against this kind of loss. So, you know, you would show up to your home and the insurance, your insurance adjuster would come out and you would be covered. So, it's rough. So, all right, let me head back to the news, but keep your eye on that. Fort Trump. And the United States, you know, intimidated by Vladimir Putin. In Europe, the Marine Corps got "quote unquote" pajama-like tropical uniforms, and our Woodlands uniforms are heavy. The problem with making a light uniform is that they're not durable. You rip them, and we had what were called rip-stop uniforms in the '80s, late '80s, and into the '90s. And, yeah, those things, if you wore them and you were in the field a lot, the Marine Corps' new lightweight and faster-drying tropical uniform is just around the corner, and it won't come at a better time as the Marine Corps ramps up its footprint across the Pacific. Our Woodlands uniforms are heavy. On August 29th, the Marine Corps issued an award to Source America in Vienna, Virginia, for $954,000 to produce the new tropical uniform, according to Barbara Hamby, a spokeswoman for MARFOR Systems Command. First article samples of the new uniform are due by the end of March, with follow-on 60 days of testing. After that, an initial 2,600 uniforms will be delivered by late June of 2019. Tropical uniforms have undergone several years of testing with 3rd Battalion, 3rd Marine Regiment in Hawaii and Japan. Marines have heaped praise on the new lightweight uniform, at times describing them as faster drying and light like pajamas. And as the article said, Sean Snow wrote this as well. The Marine Corps is designing this as it pivots towards the Pacific and the heat and humidity of Pacifics. Exactly. I like when I augment the English language with language of my own. Kind of gone, but not forgotten. The weekend safety brief. And the case for killing it. The weekend safety brief goes like this. All right, we got everybody for certain? Yes, sir, we do. All right. If you drive, don't drink. If you drink, don't drive. Got it? Everybody nod your head. Right, everybody nods their head. Ooh, hooah. Right, hoorah. All that stuff. Okay, if you're going to kill yourself in a vehicle, please don't do it till late Sunday night, early Monday, so you don't ruin everybody's weekend. Okay? Don't be selfish about it. Everybody got that? Everybody laughs. All right, no joke. Pay attention to what you're doing. If you're tired, pull over and sleep. Any questions? First sergeant, anything to add? First sergeant piles on. Boom. Safety brief done. That's a safety brief. All right. It has now been 2 weeks since the Army became a mostly weekend safety briefless fighting force. And shockingly, the service has managed to avoid collapsing into the black hole like a dying star. On the September 4th announcement, one that came as part of an outgoing effort by Army Secretary Mark Esper to discard tedious practices that detract from readiness, sent a liberating shockwave through the Army's ranks. Supervisory, or supervisory, depending on how you pronounce that word, and operating personnel who direct or affect the actions of others are no longer required to conduct safety meetings, such as safety awareness, training, and procedures review, with soldiers and Department of the Army civilians who they supervise, the release announced. No one has publicly made the declaration, but it's safe to assume that soldiers and units abiding by the new policy welcome the chance to ditch the traditional time suck. But, you know, I that reminder for everybody is not a bad thing. Right now, making it mandatory, if you're a leader and you don't talk about stuff like that, like, whoa, what are you doing? What are you doing? So, to remind everybody, as well you should, as a leader, the Army has normally takes things like that, and it raises it to a new art form. Yeah, it raises it to a new art form. And you're watch it, and you're like, holy smokes. Holy smokes. I'm talking about speaking in a formation, and you're talking about, like, we're going to have a parade or something like that. So I'm not exactly sure what the Army does. To me, the weekend safety brief or the holiday safety brief, it's appropriate. It's timely. You're reminding them. Why wouldn't you do it? Now, if you're going to, like, fly in helicopters and they don't need that. They're grown-ups. They don't behave like it all the times, and that's why you're reminding them. Okay? But again, remember, I can fix a lot of things I can't fix. Stupid. All right. One of the most motivating things you'll ever see in combat is somebody who's meritorious combat promotion. So the Marine Corps granted its first combat meritorious promotion since 2015. On Thursday of last week, the Marine Corps announced the Combat Meritorious Promotion for a Marine with the Infantry Squad Leader, MOS, promoted him to the rank of Staff Sergeant. He earned the promotion in combat while deployed to Syria as U.S. forces in the region were battling ISIS. But if you've ever seen it, it's pretty motivating. I've seen one in my life at Hurricane Point in Ramadi, 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines, corporal promoted sergeant. On the spot, boom. Right? Talk about cool things that you would ever have done in your life. Meritoriously promoted for actions in combat. That would be a cool thing to have on your resume. So it was awesome. Standing there watching it, because you're standing there with the guys that you did it with most of the time, or at least back then. This not so much, but then, boom, on the spot, promoted. Cool. Much speculation, and there was headlines all over the place last week. Trump thinks Mattis is a Democrat, wants him out. White House considering replacement for the Secretary of Defense. I will tell you this, if there is to me one of the anchors in the Trump administration, one of the most credible people in the administration, it's Jim Mattis. Now, you don't see him out being a dancing chicken for the Trump administration. And who the hell would want that job anyway? Right? Let Sarah Huckabee do that dance. Right? And I certainly would not expect Jim Mattis to go out there, right, and try to answer questions about the president and the way he does business beneath him. And it's not him anyway. And he would only stand out there and be a loyal subordinate. So he doesn't put himself in that position very often. But in terms of speculation, we hear the same thing about General Kelly. He's leaving, he's on the outs, and then, you know, what, a month ago? Trump says, yeah, he's going to be here till 2020 at least. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis says he isn't going anywhere yet. That was his quick response to questions from reporters outside the Pentagon on Tuesday about a slew of stories wondering if he is a short-timer and whether he still has President Donald Trump's confidence. In the last week or so, Politico, the website, formerly a magazine, maybe they still publish a magazine, probably not though, has reported that Trump now calls Mattis moderate dog in what they reported as a growing frustration by the president on Mattis's slow rolling on some of Trump's initiatives like the Pentagon's transgender policy. The New York Times and the Washington Post have also reported, citing multiple defense officials, that Mattis's days are numbered. Right. They did the same thing with Kelly. Here's about 64 seconds of audio outside of the Pentagon. And again, if the president wanted a dancing chicken, he hired the wrong dude. Because in my opinion, the transgender policy that he put in place is exactly the right one. So if the President of the United States is looking for dancing chickens, then hire a dancing chicken. Don't hire somebody of substance.
A recent flurry of stories suggesting that your tenure as Secretary is coming to a close.
Yeah, those have been pretty good ones, haven't they?
Can you comment on the substance of that, as whether you're thinking about leaving or...
No, I don't. I'm thinking about doing my job each day.
All right. How far out are they?
Yeah, I got to go up and get to the top.
Well, just to Bob's question, I mean, I know that you can't get ahead of where you are, but I mean, should we take it seriously, these reports?
No, or
you
think I wouldn't take it seriously at all. It's like most of those kind of things in this town. Somebody cooks up a headline. They then call to a normally chatty class of people. They find a couple other things to put in. They add the rumor. Somebody on the other coast starts writing the same thing. Next thing you know, you got a story. It'll die down just like how many times we've been through this now, just since I've been. It'll die down soon, and the people who started the rumor will be allowed to write the next rumor, too. Just the way the town is. Keep a sense of humor about it. Of course I don't think about leaving. I love it here. I'm thinking about retiring right here. I'll get a little place down on Potomac.
Of course I don't think about leaving. I'm thinking about getting a little place. I love it here. I'm thinking about getting a little place on the Potomac. So the Secretary of Defense in the news again. And these are the same issues that that we read about General Kelly leaving as the chief of staff. So again, most of it is absolute positive garbage. A couple more stories that are pretty interesting. One is the headline is "Corn in the Bones." The science behind North Korea war remains. The question is always the same, the article states. How do they know for sure who it is? Okay, DPAA, which is the Defense POW/MIA Accounting Agency, Laboratory Director John Byrd and Forensic Anthropologist Janie Jin, who lead the Korean War teams, walked reporters through the science behind how they will identify 55 boxes of remains returned by North Korea this summer. At their lab in Hawaii, each box of remains was delicately laid out and tagged on tables. Some tables had just thin broken fragments of arm bones. Others had intact femurs, some teeth, or even parts of skulls. None had a complete skeleton. There were 20 boxes from the November 1950 Battle of Usan, where 1,700 service members remain unaccounted for, and 35 boxes from the December 1950 Battle of the Chosin Reservoir, which still has 1,100 unaccounted for service members. And there's a picture that shows metal canteen, a couple metal canteens. It looks like a canteen cover. Looks like a plate. Some of the stuff that have come out of the boxes that are the circumstantial evidence that were inside the boxes. There are rare cases where bones come back with such high levels of preservation that clues such as height and teeth enable DPAA to identify them quickly. That was the case for the first two IDs that are expected to be announced this week. But for most of the tables, the labs will have to do further testing. Here are the steps that are taken. Mitochondrial DNA and nuclear DNA testing. Two types of DNA that can be extracted from remains, mitochondrial and nuclear. Even bones 70 years old can still have a service member's DNA in bone cells. You can think of a bone as material that's made of two components. The living or organic component is collagen, and the mineral component is something else. It's kind of like a hard mineral. It's hard. It's similar to what is in coral and in shells. The DNA is in all the collagen portions, Bird said. There is no DNA in the mineral components. But collagen is susceptible to decomposing, especially in warm climates. It's made testing for Vietnam War remains much more difficult. In the Korean War, the odds are better because of North Korea's harsh winters. So that's the first step. I'm trying to see. The article then goes on. Stable isotope analysis. It turns out that you can eat and that what you eat and drink leaves markers in your bodies too. And science has advanced to the point that it can not only identify your diet, but also pinpoint where on the globe you live based on the specific isotope signatures left by different types of water. How about that? So there's another piece of evidence. So that's how they're going to identify the remains. The other story I want to get to that's in Marine Corps Times is the shooting down of a Russian aircraft off the Syrian coast by the Syrians. A Russian reconnaissance aircraft was shot down by Syrian forces responding to an Israeli airstrike, killing all 15 aboard in what Vladimir Putin said Tuesday was a chain of tragic accidental circumstances. Yikes. The downing of the IL-20 highlighted the dangers posed by the conflicting interests of various powers in the crowded skies over Syria. You know what? You get what you get. You want to climb in bed with idiots? You get what you get. In an effort to maintain that relationship, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu quickly called Putin to express sorrow over the deaths of the plane's crew, blamed the plane's loss squarely on Syria, and offered to send Israeli Air Force chief to Moscow to share information about the incident. The Russian military said the plane was hit 35 kilometers offshore, over the Med, on Monday night as it was returning to a Russian airbase in Syria. The incident triggered testy exchanges of blame between Israel and Russia. So if the Syrians fired the missile, are they doing that under the supervision of the Russians? So does ultimately it lay in the lap of the Russians? Because their Syrian dupes had their heads up their ass? The Israeli military said its fighter jets were targeting a Syrian military facility involved in providing weapons for Iran's proxy Hezbollah militia, noting that it warned Russia of the coming raid in line with the deconfliction agreement. It said the Syrian army launched the missiles that hit the plane when the Israeli jets were already inside Israeli airspace. So, So they call you and tell you this is going to happen, and you have your head so far up your ass, you don't reroute your own aircraft around the area, and it's just rolling in there. And then this is typical Russian bullshit. The Israeli pilots were using the Russian aircraft as a shield and pushed it into the line of fire of the Syrian air defense. Remember, how do you know the Russians are lying? Because their lips are moving. Okay? This is straight up incompetence. Right? Something's going on there. We have reconnaissance returning from some kind of routine reconnaissance mission. And it's inbound, and we've got shit going on in the airspace. We might want to reroute that sumbitch. Maybe. Maybe. Stupid. Stupid, stupid, stupid. And the sad part is that 14 Russian soldiers, right? It's 14 Russian soldiers pay for somebody else's mistake with their lives. That's the really stupid part of it. All right, I'm going to take a break. We're going to listen to, I got to cover some more stories when we come back, and then we're going to talk about, I haven't even got to North Korea yet. Hello. And then you're going to listen to Admiral Stockdale today on a Wednesday, hump day. More of Allmarine Radio coming up next on your home for it right here, the one and only, that's right, All Warrior Radio Network.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Everybody get up.
Okay, I got no time for that. Joining me is F-18 man, Kurt Knowles, call sign Rudy. What's going on, man? He's staying at the Marine Memorial Hotel up in San Francisco, and he's quite enamored with it. He sent at least 38 pictures last night. And I could tell you just about every place he was. So how's your trip to San Francisco so far?
I'm trying to motivate you on getting up here, man. You said you've driven by it, but you actually have not set step inside the building.
Never been inside Marine Memorial Hotel in San Francisco. That is true. That is a factual statement.
Well, it's kind of cool the way they have it laid out with, like, each floor has kind of a theme. And I stayed on the Navy Cross floor, and they have all the pictures of people that have been awarded the Navy Cross, and including kind of a big monument slash, like a huge, like, things like shadow box with pictures of Chesty Puller's family. And lo and behold, I'm like, oh, I know that name, Jeremiah Workman. So I read his citation and there's a picture of him up there. So that was kind of neat. A lot of, you know, what's crazy is just a lot of pictures of over the last 10, 15 years. You know what I mean? It's like Iraq and Afghanistan and stuff like that. So
was I in any of the pictures?
I did not see you, but I might not have been looking hard enough.
You did not see me in them. What kind of bullshit is that, man? I'm a Marine. I should be in that hotel.
But I did see. Quite a few Navy SEALs. You know, it's like Marines and Navy SEALs.
Why? Let's not go there, okay? Let's not go there. That's a problem, okay? The Syrians shot a Russian Su-20 out of the air as it was returning to base from a reconnaissance mission over the Med, evidently. And the Russians are blaming the Israelis for it and saying that the Israelis were conducting an attack on a Hezbollah staging area, and then the Syrians shot down the Russian reconnaissance aircraft, killing 14, I might add. So I want you to draw a picture of something spooling in the air over eastern Israel near the border. Right, we got Israeli fighter activity. Right, we know that because we watch everything they do on their bases. They're up in the sky, right? And we have eyeballs 4-1 RTB from the Med on this route. Can you explain what ought to happen when all that is spooling simultaneously?
Well, when you're tactically flying, and even when you're flying in civilian aircraft, you have routes or essentially what you call like freeways in the sky of areas that you should be flying and ways that you should be transiting different areas, right? Okay. So we used to transit Pakistan, but we had a very specific route that this is your corridor that you're flying through, like a tube. And if you're outside of that tube, you could be in a situation where you might be considered to be a threat, right? So now I would say that part of the world, they are very aggressive. The Israelis, the Syrians, they're not afraid to pull the trigger. And I would be very cautious if you're flying around out there and you deviate from something that you should be doing. you might face some pretty heavy repercussions, i.e. being shot at.
Okay. Could you explain a couple things? Explain squawking, and in this dance, it gets done every day over the Middle East. You know, we're deconflicting, and we're flying every day there, and we're not getting shot out of the sky by anybody. Explain squawking, and then talk about who's controlling that aircraft when it's inbound, right, to land at some base in Syria. So it's minutes out of Syria. That's a pretty compressed place, right? It's not like the United States where, you know, you're going to fly for 4 hours. It's pretty tiny over there. So explain squawking, and then explain who's controlling the SU-20 as it is inbound to wherever it's going to land.
So squawking, if you think of it as an assigned code, almost like a license plate, but it's issued every day, right? So your aircraft's issued this code, this four-digit code. You typically in civilian aviation, it's four digits. In tactical aviation, you actually have what's called a mode one, mode two, mode three, mode four squawk, but in civilian aviation, we use one of them, mode three. And the modes are irrelevant. What's important is that each aircraft or tactical formation flight is assigned a code. And that code tells the air traffic controllers what kind of aircraft you are. And then they can essentially, on their scope, on their radar, they can identify that that is a American F-18, and then that F-18 should have certain rights and privileges to transit this airspace, right? So when you're squawking this code, you are given what's called, when you're international, you have, if they deem that you are approved or authorized to fly through, then they'll direct you to turn around. So your assigned codes and call signs all have to be pre-authorized. And then that gives you essentially permission to fly through that airspace. And so if you think of your license plate on your car is also the same in the aircraft as a squawk, a code. And that license plate or that squawk has permissions almost like going through a toll booth on a bridge, right? You're not going to cross this bridge unless you have pre-authorized payment.
Kind of like Easy Pass out here in California.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And if you could reach this airspace or this bridge and you don't have it, they're going to tell you to turn around. So you always want to make sure all your stuff's pre-coordinated before you launch, because you could be in a real bad situation having to return somewhere that you weren't planning to go. Well, if as you're flying along, like airspace is divided up into, we call it almost like wedding cakes, upside-down wedding cakes or airspace. So they're like cylinders, right? And each of these cylinders have altitude blocks and then lateral blocks that have different controllers. So if you're down low, you're talking to typically an approach controller. If you're up high, you're talking to center. And it's the same thing internationally, right? And they have blocks of airspace that's being controlled by different air traffic controllers. And it doesn't make a difference if it's civilian or military. It's either you're talking to a military controller or you're talking to a commercial civilian controller, but it's the same terminology, pretty much the same rules, and they have the same authorizations. Like, I own this airspace, and I'm responsible for the aircraft in that airspace. And whether it's military-owned airspace or civilian-owned airspace by that country, these people are, that's their, basically their lane, that is their control, right? So if you're the gatekeeper on that airspace and somebody's entering in, or you can kick them out at any time, and you're responsible for deconflicting other aircraft, and you're responsible for moving airplanes around so that they basically don't hit each other. That's pretty much your main responsibility. Tactically, when it's military controllers, what would happen is a military aircraft would check in with what people would normally think of like a tactical center, and then that tactical center would pass them on to a terminal controller, i.e. a FAC or a JTAC, who, again, owns that airspace. And you are assigned this block altitude and you're, I own you and I'm going to make sure that there's nothing in your way and I'm going to direct you and drive your aircraft so that I can employ it effectively and also that you're not going to get hit by another airplane.
Okay. So if I'm this SU, 22 and I'm inbound over the Med, I'm in my lane because I've got to transit Israel, right? I check in. At some point, I'm going to check in with my Russian controller back at the base I'm headed to. Yes. So.
Yeah, you would. But here's the curveball in the whole thing, Mac. Is reconnaissance aircraft step into a whole other lane where. Why are they doing reconnaissance, right? They're snooping and pooping without permission, right? So they're entering in and looking at things that they're not, you know, they don't want anyone to know they're around, right? So
yeah, but not on the I understand what you're saying, but not on the transit in and out. And now most of these aircraft, most of this aircraft, an SU-22, right? It's a turboprop. Right, and it stays in international airspace, obviously, and then tangentially flies its routes and looks into stuff, and that's what the technology that they have on board does. It spies from international airspace, and so then, but when they head back, right now I'm going to go back and land. I'm not spying. I'm going back to land.
Yeah,
I guess
they have a side route.
Yeah, you're on a sound route, and it's routine stuff. But all of a sudden, as I'm moving east over the Med, Israeli fighters take off, and they're on the move, right? And normally they're not, right? They're not squawking, they're nose cold, right? And they're headed to do something, right? Who tells me the SU-22? Who reroutes me or says, "Hey man, you got to turn. You're going to have to hold here. We've got some shit going on." Whose responsibility is that? It's certainly not a commercial airliner, some kind of
air traffic controller.
Yeah, it's not a civilian air traffic controller's job to do that. I would think it would be our military that's got to talk to you and say, "Hey, we've got Israelis that just took off. Stand by. All right, hold where you're."
Well,
at.
Remember, they're not just on one radio.
Right,
so they could be talking to the civilian controllers and saying, you know, approve to transit this airspace,
and
on their other radios, hey, be advised, we've got 2 F-16 inbound. Your position, you know, looks like they're heading towards you. I mean, it could be something as simple as that. Like, you know, on their tactical side, their tactical controllers could be conveying that if they're talking to them.
And then, but they should be talking to them if that stuff's going on. Yes, you would hope.
Yeah, right? Well, I mean, also it's coverage too, right? Like, it depends if they're in within radio, what range of coverage they should be.
Right, they should be.
And it's more advanced technology now. We're actually doing it via satellites, so.
Right.
You're able to scan communication for thousands of miles away.
Okay, so
So
the sequence of events should be the SU-20s inbound, flying normal patterns, traffic pattern stuff. They're going to transit from the Med to their home base. Israeli aircraft take off and are beginning to operate tactically, right? That's a red light warning, okay? Especially if I'm inbound. Somebody on the tactical side is paying attention, has to deconflict this, right? Either reroute them or change the timing, tell them to hold, but somebody's got to deconflict that stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm questioning is who owned the airspace that they were transiting through, and then what was being discussed with them on their tactical radio, if anything. So if you have a radio that you're talking to your normal, you know, what I call like center,
right.
Then it's just tough to kind of analyze as far as what might have occurred. Did Israelis, they intercepted them and then shot them down?
No. The Israelis were operating, evidently attacking a Hezbollah base. So the Israelis,
okay.
The Syrians shoot the Russians down. The Syrians mistake the Russians for Israelis and shoot them down as the Israelis evidently were flying in the area aggressively, right? The SU-20 evidently doesn't know this, follows them into the area, and then the Syrians smoke the Russians.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Why?
Because the Syrians, all their, you know, you're looking at blips on your screen, right? And you get, oh, we got them. This is the attack aircraft, probably F-16s, that were bombing us, right? They're just looking for a lock, right? And so if you're the SU-22 and you're, you know, trolling along, you're the slow fish, right? You're like the big slow fish. You cast your line out there, and what's going to get the bite is the big slow fish. The fast ones, you know, it's harder to capture on the radar. And all the Russians are thinking, or all the Syrians are thinking, is we got them, right? We got the guys who've been throwing bombs at us. Shoot. Well, you're the SU-22.
No,
SU-20. It looks like I could C-130 kind of.
Right.
Yeah. So no, it doesn't. Now that makes sense because they're pointing their ground to air radar. Right, they're trying to figure out how can I employ my surface-to-air missiles to shoot down these guys that were just shooting bombs at us. Then the SU-20 is nearby where the F-16s were just flying. That radar is just, it's grabbing. Now, if they're not looking at squat codes, or they're not looking to identify the airplane on their radar, and they're just looking for the first hit they get because they assume that, well, whatever's in this piece of sky must be tactical and must be the ones that were putting bombs down. I mean, that kind of stuff happens, you know, especially people that the United States tends to do things where we triple check stuff. Are we sure that this is the right ones? Are right. we sure that this is,
and
you know,
and it's an just for the record, it's an IL-20, not an SU-20. So the if you've done this, and I did this aboard an aircraft carrier years ago, right? What you're doing is, if it's not squawking, is it in a commercial lane, and is it flying? What kind of profile is it flying? So what is its speed? What is it doing? Right? Look, so you have F-16s flying one way, and then you have an IL-20 flying another way, lumping along as a turbo, which means you have incompetent operators shooting missiles, is what you have. Because you're not going to get those two son of a bitches confused, right?
No, dude, as I say, you threw me off in the SU-20. SU-20 is like a fighter.
Right, no, it's IL-20.
Yeah. Dude, you're messing. I'm like driving around right now in San Francisco. You're messing with my brain.
Not hard to do.
Let me look at the IL-20. Oh, yeah.
No, you're right. It's a C-130, yeah. with radar pod down underneath and electronically stacked in the fuselage.
Yeah. The SU-22 is actually pretty bitchin' plane. The SU-22.
Okay, we're not going to talk about the SU-22. Okay, stay on task, bro. Stay on task. Herding cats, folks. Herding cats. So, I mean, you can't get the two things confused, man. It's ridiculous. If you start peeling the onion on this, you're like, what the fuck are those idiots in Syria doing? Now, the question is, were there drunk Russians manning the Syrian battery? Hello?
Yeah, well, I mean, here's my honest opinion is, like I said, the United States triple checks things and make sure that we're not going to shoot at something that's going to have some drastic repercussions. But man, this lady is just screaming at me. I am not a good city driver, by the way. I'm the master in suburbs, but you get me into a city, like I'm all over the place. Oh
my God. That's a sad comment for a fighter pilot. Agile mind.
Hey, I'm telling you, I literally, this is a whole different level of driving. I was sitting there, this guy's flipping me off because I'm in a cargo loading area. His blockers are on, and then I pull out this really pretty girl. She's screaming at me to get out of the way. I'm like, I'm just trying not to get hit by you guys. You know what I mean? It's like bumper cars.
Yeah, you're being stupid, okay? Obviously, the mental agility that we attribute to fighter pilots.
Yeah, and I'm talking SU-20s and IL-20s, and you got me so, my brain is so messed up right now.
Okay, so let me walk you back through the basics of this. So we've got the IL-20 lumping along.
All right.
We've got F-16s. They go flying, and they're... And then you got operators that are looking at these tracks, right? Track one is this, track two is this, track one and two are not squawking. Track three, it's lumping along, right? Shoot track three. What? Okay. And so this is going on.
And you know what? You might have just cracked onto something. Is your reconnaissance aircraft? I don't know what you're. Maybe they're not squawking. You know what I mean? Like, maybe they're trying to be...
Okay, let's say they're not squawking. You know, I, as a Russian controller, right, in their version of Doha, right, that is controlling all things everywhere, right, I'm watching this spool, and it's like, hey, Israeli fighters up. I mean, we used to track aircraft out of two bases in Iran, Bandar Abbas and Chabahar. Those things would go wheels up, beep. We'd track them from the time shit they were taxiing. I think, okay. So it's not. So it's not like you don't like when these things get up in the air. You know it now. So boom, and they track them all the time. All right, and so these Israeli aircraft are up flying. So now I got enemy activity in this area. I know where my aircraft are. We got the IL-20. Inbound, this stuff spools. Is it my job to either reroute them, right, and reroute them, or tell them to hold and pause till we get this thing cleared up, depending on the fuel status?
It depends who owns the airspace.
Doesn't
right?
doesn't somebody talk to these guys and say, hey, the Israelis are blowing shit up, stand by? A commercial guy's not going to do that. And if they're not talking to a military controller, then what are they, just driving around stupid?
Yeah, but you know what? There's been civilian airplanes shot down because mistaken,
Right. But it's not a civilian controller's responsibility to tell them that there's military activity going on. It's some Russian air ops guy's responsibility to do that. Yes.
That's true. That's true.
Thank you.
They're not going to say, "Hey, you got F-16s inbound from returning from returning from this area." They might say, you have traffic, passing underneath you 1,000 feet or 2,000 feet. They'll deconflict that way and hopefully talk your eyes on that traffic. But, there's times like when you're flying around out there, like you're kind of alone and unafraid. Like there's parts of that area too that don't have radar coverage, right?
Right.
I'm reading
where. The route that the IL-20 was flying was from the Med onto Syrian soil, wasn't passing over Lebanon, certainly wasn't passing over Israel. So that stretch of the Mediterranean coast, north of Lebanon, south of Turkey, that belongs to Syria, that's where the transit. So it was 100% Syrian.
God, and the Syrians were up there, like it says, it's not like the F-16 are dropping bombs or whatever the Israelis are using. Now they're not happy, right? They're just trying to get airplanes to stop flying over their skies and dropping bombs. So shoot it.
It sounds stupid. All right, I will let you get back to driving.
Lord, I know you love the city, man, but this is not my...
No, you gotta... You're not really... You don't have the mental dexterity to do it, man.
You're in a little alley right now, just trying not to get hit. I felt way more at home on the ranch with Rob in Montana than I do downtown San Francisco right now.
Well, good luck. Good luck. Hey,
yeah.
If you don't survive, just know that we all love you and care about you.
That's hilarious. All right, I'll talk to you.
Good luck. See ya. Yeah. What the hell? He totally, I call him up. All I'm doing is I'm going to tee these things up for you, and he's supposed to explain, you know, aviation operations, and he totally tanks it on me. Unbelievable. Thanks, Rudy. Remind me not to do that again. Okay, let me give you the top five stories in early bird. Yeah, let me tell you the sequence of events. IL-20 inbound, the F-16s take off. It's all Syrian controllers, right? And I'm sure there's Russian controllers talking to the IL-20, right? We have activity. Either reroute them further north, right? Or, hey, you've got to either go land here if you're bingo on fuel, or you got to turn and you got to hold west of this line. Got it, comrade. And they do it, right? In the absence of that, and you're trolling through, you know, the missile battery that mistakes an IL-20 for an F-16, they're stupid, okay? And so blaming it on the Israelis, which is typical of what the Russians would do, right? So there you have it. I can fix a lot of stuff. I can't fix stupid. Okay. Top five stories on early bird, and then we'll take a break, and then you'll hear Admiral Stockdale. One, Fort Trump considered permanent base in Poland. Yeah, that's awesome. Two, North Korea's Kim agrees to inspections in a bid to salvage, right, nuclear talks. Okay, so the United States and North Korea, not so much right now, right? So what does a girl that wants to get back into your life do when you've broken up? They talk to your sister, right? So that's what's going on here. North Korea said on Wednesday it would permanently abolish its key missile facilities in the presence of foreign experts in a new gesture by leader Kim Jong-un to revive faltering talks with Washington over his country's nuclear program. After a summit in Pyongyang, Kim and South Korean President Moon Jae-in said the North was also willing to close its main nuclear complex. And then here's the kicker. Stand by. Hold it. But only if the United States took unspecified reciprocal actions. Well, what the fuck would those be? All right? So again, it's, again, stupid. Stupid. We'll do this only if the United States takes reciprocal actions. Well, what is that? They have to remove all troops. There's no nuclear weapons on the Korean Peninsula yet, on the south side, right? So what would that be? Remove all your troops from South Korean soil? Yeah, that's not going to happen. So what are you talking about? So, look, in my opinion, without those things specified, this is a bunch of bullshit. There you go. That's called cutting to the chase. I'm willing to do this and this and this if the United States takes reciprocal measures. What would those measures be? We're not going to talk about that today. Oh, really? Nice. All right. Next, Senate deadline nears, Senate approves a $674 billion defense bill. With the fiscal year winding down, Senate lawmakers on Tuesday advanced a multi-agency appropriations deal that would prevent a government shutdown, give the DOD a full year budget on schedule for the first time in a decade. Okay, so stay tuned. They will screw that up, trust me. This is Made in America, right? Shrapnel found in Yemen ties U.S. bombs to a string of civilian deaths over the course of the bloody civil war. And there's a photograph of a child that looks like they've been burned and scraped. Okay? Now, God only knows how this child was burned and scraped, okay? But it's being... Obviously, the insinuation is that an American bomb did it. We sell ordnance and military items all over the world. So are we responsible for where those bombs go if another sovereign nation decides to drop them? CNN, man, I have no use for them at all. Okay? They report, in my opinion, garbage. Okay? And it's not simply because they're a liberal, but if you watch them, it is, in my opinion, it is a joke. Air Force T-6 crashes in Texas. Crew suffers minor injuries. An Air Force T-6 Texan 2 trainer aircraft crashed Tuesday afternoon during a training flight in San Antonio, and the student and instructor both sustained minor injuries, the Air Force confirmed. All right, so finally, after almost 2 hours through the news, that doesn't happen very much. Norway deployment frozen as Camp Lejeune cleans up after Hurricane Florence. Yep, right out of All Marine Radio. Love that. Our first appearance on the Early Bird. Commentary analysis. Getting beyond door kicking. Four tasks for urban warriors. This is the Modern Institute at West Point. From the Heritage Foundation. The U.S. should not sign a peace declaration with North Korea. And then an interview with an Iranian fighter in Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. This is the Long War Journal, which says a lot of stuff like that. Abu Abdullah explains, I could spell that in my sleep, Alpha, Bravo, Delta, Uniform, Lima, Lima, Alpha, Hotel. Yeah, Muhammad. Mike, Uniform, Hotel, Alpha, Mike, Alpha, Delta. Yeah. We have in custody, goes before that. Abu Abdullah explains that his fighting unit is comprised of all kinds of Iranian folks, such as Turks, Baloch, and Kurds, all of whom traveled to Syria to fight Iran's ally. How about that? Interesting. So, interesting to hear, or read stuff like that. So, you can find that in the Long Wars Journal. All right, let me read you a couple of emails. IL-20. It's tough to deconflict and manage the scenario when you're good, us. I seriously doubt if the Syrians are any good. I'd be curious at what point the Israeli Vipers were detected. When you send missiles downrange, you have to know what's out there. Yeah, let me just tell you the question. The question is, was it Syrians shooting the missiles, or was it Russians? Was it Russian technicians? And again, when that's your business, and here's what you do. You sit in a room, and you got a radar screen in front of you, right? And all of a sudden, this blip shows up. And it should be squawking. That's your license plate, right? So it should be squawking, and what happens is you put your mouse on it, or depending on how your software is configured, or it simply pops up. And it gets a label based on the squawk, you know, 8413. Oh, that's an American aircraft, right? I tap the screen because I have a touch screen. Boom, and all of its data, altitude, speed, right, and whatever else that they put in there, all communicated by that. Okay, so that's your business every day. So you're looking at this radar, and you're sitting in western Syria, and your radars cover the Israel. And when something lifts off from one of their fighter bases, boom, that thing pops on the screen. Everybody knows about it. Okay? And now I've got an IL-28. How you mistake one for the other? Not really sure. Okay? Not really sure. Now, what happens that gets people confused is all of a sudden somebody's not squawking, okay? And normally, aircraft getting ready to fight are not squawking. They're flying what's called nose cold. We know what we're doing. We don't want you to know what we're doing. We're not squawking shit. So, was that the case for the IL-20? Was it not squawking? And then either incompetent Syrians or incompetent Russians? Be interesting to find out. And you know that'll come out. If it was Russians that pulled the trigger, that'll come out because the Syrians will sell. Like, that wasn't us. Those are Russians. They did that. We didn't do shit. They don't even let us near those firing batteries. Are you kidding me with their guys in the air? So, anyway. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what comes out. But stupid. Stupid. So, anyway. So deconfliction is tough. And again, when you sit and watch these guys do it all the time, for instance, in our combat operations center in Fallujah, well, in Ramadi and Fallujah division and then regimental, right? We have, for lack of a better term, air traffic controllers, right? And they're deconflicting, they're passing aircraft between let's just call it the MEF asset that controls aviation and air traffic controllers, right? Air traffic get dynamically retasked at times. They were assigned. They took off, going to support something for RCT-1. Something happens up in north of us with RCT-2, and all of a sudden they're dynamically retasked. These guys take care of it. They reroute them, pass them to somebody else. So that's how it works. They're babysat, okay? The pilots are like bus drivers, okay? Go here, do this. Now go here and do this. Okay, you're going to talk to him. Do what he tells you to. Tell him what you see, and then drop the bomb where he tells you. Got it. Okay? Pilots, that's what they do. Bus drivers with bombs, okay? Need guidance. Somebody's got to control. So the Russians don't have a similar system. And even though it is crowded, that's what you do every day. That's what you do every day. And then you smoke one of your own aircraft. That's not even first of all, it would make sense if it was an SU-22. Okay? At least it's flying the same profile at roughly the same speed. Blah, 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 blah. Got confused. Okay. But an IL-20? That's like mistaking, right, a C-130 for a F-35. Huh? So, there you have it. Let me read you another email. Good morning, Mac. The Dems use Mrs. Ford as a pawn to carry their lies and deceit. They sat on her letter for months. They know her story is so inaccurate, and no law enforcement would touch it with a 10-foot pole. Be well. I haven't looked into much of this because I just consider this the ickiness of it. And so, I don't know who this woman is. I don't know anything about her story. If you were one of her family members, what would you tell her? Do you want to go into the meat grinder that is waiting you? Your name's already out there. Do you want to burn your life down in this political fight between these two parties? If it was my sister, I'd say no. I'd say absolutely, absolutely not. Do you want to be Monica Lewinsky? And then you go from there. But again, the Republicans are no better than the Democrats at this stuff. Same game that gets played. It is the game of Washington, D.C. Right? And not John McCain in his last speech or congressman being shot at baseball practice. Nothing changes the trajectory, the disgusting trajectory of politics. Nothing. You know, and again, you can fight, but at the end of the day, come together and do the business of the nation. They don't do that anymore. And that's the problem. The problem isn't the fighting. The problem is that the fighting is all they do now. And they don't make public policy. I mean, for instance, the first time in a decade that the DOD will have a budget. Crazy, right? Crazy. On-time budget that they can plan for and they can execute. This is the email. The All Marine Radio head mother sent it to me because I sent it to her. Because he uses a word that she used to me the first time I heard it. So, this is the email that I... Where the hell? Why couldn't I find it? Anyway, now I'm committed to finding it. I got it Monday. Hi, Mac. You often talk about how good it feels to help others. Every year, the yacht club I belong to has veterans from the Chelsea Soldiers Home come to the club, have a meal, and hang out. Chelsea Soldiers Home is the place of last resort for veterans who have no other option. I know just the words yacht club sound like rampant. So this, obviously, this is written by a guy named Chris, okay? Chris has listened to the program. Because he knows what's coming after the rest of us here, Yacht Club, right? So he writes this. It's actually funny. I know just the words Yacht Club sounds like rampant douchebaggery, but for the most part, the club is working guys and retired guys. I've worked in the kitchen the past 2 years helping out with meal prep. I didn't want to interact with the vets because I was unsure how I would react. I love talking to World War II vets especially, but I didn't want to get choked up in front of these guys because some are in pretty tough shape. This past weekend, we had the vet event. I took a more active role with the guys. I got up on the bus and got their attention, gave them a little brief on what to expect and ask any Marines on board. One vet in a wheelchair shot his hand up. I walked over to him, asked what his job was and when. He was a mortarman. In 1967 and 1968 in Vietnam. He seemed so happy to be recognized. Another guy told me he was a CB, and another was an infantryman in the Battle of the Bulge. He was in great shape. He's got to be at least 91. It just felt great. Then, in a twist just filled with karma, my wife and I fished the afternoon tide. We boated 14 striped bass and 3 tau tog in 90 minutes. The best fishing day I ever had in a lot of fishing days over the years. You're right. All Marine Radio is a tsunami for good. I don't think I would have made that extra effort if it wasn't for listening to All Marine Radio, then understanding the impact we can have. Signed, Chris. And so Tsunami is all the All Marine Radio den mother. Libby, that's her word. She used that word. And so it's amazing, though, when you stick your hand out and, you know, you start a conversation with somebody. And the pain that you can ease. And that's, you know, I'm not even sure he preached the gospel of post-traumatic winning. But it starts with saying hello, and it starts with easing somebody's pain. And then he linked his karma to good fishing. That might be a stretch. That might be a coincidence. Okay? But feels good. Feels good. And that's the winning part. There's nothing any of us can do about our past. The only thing you can do is be as good as you can be in the present. And when you are that and you touch others' lives, it somehow or other softens the thud of your own pain. Right? That's the winning part of it. Coexisting, yeah, you got to learn how to do that, no doubt. The winning part, it becomes irresistible after you start doing it. Yeah, absolutely, positively irresistible. All right, we're going to take another break. And then when we come back, you're going to hear James Stockdale, which is an amazing, amazing, amazing interview. So whatever you do, do not touch that dial. All Marine Radio continues on this Wednesday. Right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio. Oh, hold on. Mac, in my opinion, there's no doubt that Russians shot their own aircraft out of the sky. Those artillery, and then in parentheses, air defense type, are not being manned by morons, especially in that sector of Syria. Okay? Maybe out east, where nobody's flying, they are. But butting up against Israel, those are surely the ones most probable to be shooting. I would tell you that you're fools if you believe that the Syrians pulled the trigger on that. Russians were certainly manning those. They shot down their own airliner. And it goes back to things I've heard you say. They are not what they hold themselves out to be to the rest of the world. They are faking it. I think that's pretty close to a quote. Well, I think that's pretty close to a quote, too. You see them in action, it ain't pretty. Just thought I would pile on. Good luck to Rudy navigating San Francisco. I thought it was pretty funny when you said, if you don't make it, just know we love you, or words to that effect. Everybody needs encouragement, man. Everybody needs encouragement, and they need to know you love them. So he sounded like he was slipping. All right, we'll take a break. Admiral James Stockdale in an incredible interview. And what's incredible about it is just his deeds. His deeds. So you'll hear that coming up next. Don't touch your dial. That's an order. Out. Boom!
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.